Welcome. We love sports. Yes? Y'all didn't seem as enthusiastic about that as I thought you would being a sports crowd, but it's fine. We'll work on that. We love sports. Yes? Much, much better. In fact, I know you love sports. I love sports. These are some of my favorite teams. I've already met some Hawkeye fans. Stop. Wow, I didn't see that coming. That's a rookie mistake on my part. I didn't see that coming at all. I am a big Tottenham Hotspur supporter. Minnesota United, Gonzaga is one of my schools that I attended. I'm a Gonzaga alum. I love the Boston Red Sox and, of course, the Iowa Hawkeyes. I got a lot more sports teams that I could talk about here that I like, but that's okay. You don't need to hear about my favorite sports teams. I know you love sports because you dedicated an hour of your life, an hour of your gathering to sit and listen to me ramble about sports for an hour. It's an hour of your life you're never going to get back, so I hope it's worth it. We're not the only people who love sports, and I know you know that, but we're not the only people who love sports. Some of the ways we can tell how people love a thing, how much they love a thing, is by where they invest their money and their time. So check this out. The world is in love with sports. Last year alone, the global sports revenue around the world, $170 billion was spent on sports. $170 billion. I teach at a college. I can't fathom that kind of number. But what's even crazier is when you break that down just a little bit, that $170 billion, those two pieces of the pie that I've highlighted in gold total about 27%. That's just money that was spent on ticketing and hospitality. So tickets to games, concessions, things like that, and merchandise and licensing. You're paying to have somebody's logo or their name put on your shirt. 27%. That means last year, people around the world spent, I got to make sure I got the math right, nearly $46 billion on those two things. We spend a lot of money on sports. Yeah? Somebody sounded really disappointed over here about that. They're like, yeah, I suppose. All right. It's not just where we spend our money. It's what we spend our time doing. Last year in the United States alone, 292 million tickets were bought to sporting events. One of the stats that I'm proud of in that, by the way, is we saw a 50% increase year over year in women's sports ticket sales. So women's sports are finally getting the credit they deserve. You can clap for that. I'm an Iowa guy, so I'll call that the Caitlin Clark effect. It's fine. We saw that. It's not just about which games we go to. Sometimes we can't get to a game. So we watch sports almost religiously. We watch sports. It's on in the background. We're watching it. 5 billion people. This is the most viewed sporting event of all time. It was the 2022 FIFA World Cup. 5 billion people around the world watched different parts of that tournament, including 1.5 billion viewers around the world watching the finals. Billions of people tune into these annual events. In the United States, the Super Bowl garners more attention than any other sporting event. Last year's Super Bowl in 2024, 123.7 million viewers. And the 129 million who were tuned in at halftime made it the most watched sporting event in American broadcast history. We love sports. Yeah? By the way, shameless plug, I teach a 16-week class on this topic at Concordia University in St. Paul. They gave me an hour. So I could have told you a lot more, given you a lot more evidence on what we love about sports, how we show our love of sports. That alone should show you that clearly we care about sports. With anything we love that much, we should probably also ask the question, does God even care? We love sports. Does God even care? You might come in here. I mean, that's the name of the session. So you might come in here with an opinion on that. You might come in here with your thoughts already made up on whether or not God cares. Yeah? I see Hey Hey in the crowd over here. That rooster knows. He's got an answer. Here's my answer. Here's my simple answer. I think the answer to that question is yes. I think God cares about sports. I see some youth excited about that. I see some adult leaders kind of skeptical about that. I hear a bell dinging, which probably means I'm right. But I don't think God cares about sports for the same reasons you and I care about sports. I don't think that's what's happening here. I don't think God is sitting at home doing his sports thing. But here's my first piece of evidence that I'll hold up for why I think God cares about sports. The Bible talks about sports. Sports show up in the Bible. There's baseball in the creation story. In the big inning, God created the heavens and the earth. Genesis 1:1, brought to you by Major League Baseball. Like three of you laughed at that. Thank you. I think my jokes are funny. I know they're not. If you laugh and give me some pity laughs, we're going to get through this really well together. There's tennis in Moses' story. He served in Pharaoh's court. Oh, yeah, no, that's terrible. Though we'll get the dad jokes out of the way. Those two things are not real, but here's what is real. The Bible is rife with examples of sports, particularly in the New Testament, where Paul talks with us about, do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? An athlete is not crowned unless he competes according to the rules. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race, and so on and so forth. The Bible consistently holds up sports as a metaphor for the Christian walk. Now, maybe that doesn't point to the idea that God cares about sports. Yeah? That's just saying God's using it in his word as an illustration for you and I because we understand it. We care about sports. Here's another piece really quickly. I said this a minute ago, but I don't think God is sitting up in heaven caring about sports, like cheering on his favorite team, decked out in their gear, watching the big game somewhere. This is not file photos, by the way. This is, what's that? Yeah, it's definitely AI. Right? So he's not sitting up in heaven watching the big game, cheering on his favorite team. He's not peeking over the roof of the stadium as his favorite team demolishes their arch rival, smiling as the sun beams in. That's not why God cares about sports. My theory on this is that God cares about sports because sports are filled with people. People like you who are at a Christian youth gathering, who know Jesus, who know what Jesus has done for them, who know about Jesus' love for them. And sports are filled with people who don't know that love, who don't yet know Jesus. I think God cares about sport. I'm kind of spoiling the ending here, but God cares about sport because God cares about you. God cares about me. God cares about all people. So what I want to unpack today as we walk through our session is these pieces. I got 16 weeks on this topic. If you want the full spiel, come and take my class at Concordia St. Paul. But for 1 hour, what I want to do is I want to hold up these four pieces. What sport teaches us? What are we learning from sport today? What is your vocation as an athlete? What is your calling as an athlete? Who were you made to be? The creation of humanity and the creation of people plays into this. I've got a question there. Love your teammates as yourself? We're going to unpack what it looks like maybe to use sport as a mission field. And then I want us to end by rethinking the church's relationship with modern sport. If we were to really reconsider, what does it look like? Is sport just a thing that we like and that we go to and that we do? Or is sport something greater than that? Is it more than just a game? That's where we're going to end our time together today. That sound okay? Maybe. Yeah, you didn't sound too excited again. I'm losing you already. You got that in your notebook? All right, he's ready. All right, let's talk. Let's jump in. That's me as a kid. I grew up in a small town in Iowa in a family that did not care about sports. I grew up not knowing anything about sports. So I was a choir kid. That was me in choir in middle school. I was really shy. I'm still really shy and very awkward. And choir helped me a little bit with that. But what really, really helped me come out of that shell was that I found hockey. And that picture kind of gets cut off there a little bit. But you can see the flames on my stick. It was really cool in that time to take your senior pictures with like flames on a hockey stick or something like that. So I did that, and I learned a lot. I became pretty athletic. It was kind of a miracle because I was pretty klutzy before that, pretty clumsy. And then in high school, I played soccer, and that was a weird thing because I had never really cared about soccer, but I had some friends who said, we need another goalie, and you're pretty athletic. You can jump in front of a ball and keep it out of the net. So I did that. And I'd never played soccer really before, and I became the backup varsity goalie at my high school, and that was it. And that was kind of my thing. And so throughout middle school and high school, I kind of transitioned from being this choir kid into an athlete, and I loved sports. I fell in love with sports, and it became a real big part of who I thought I was. It became a big part of my identity. I identified myself as an athlete. If you would have asked me, how would you describe yourself? My first thing would have been a hockey player. Yeah. Anybody else define themselves that way, by the way? When somebody asks you, who are you? What do you do? You say, like, I'm a football player, I'm a swimmer, volleyball player. My guy with the notebook up here, he's raising his hand. Anybody else? Kind of take that. You internalize that. It's part of who you are. So then I ended high school and I was kind of done. I didn't go to college to play hockey anywhere. I didn't go to college to play soccer anywhere. I was just done. And for a long time, I didn't do anything athletic. I to be really honest, I got out of shape. I was I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything athletic. I didn't do anything physical. And it was a really rough time for me in my life. I was kind of bitter with sport because I really had fallen in love with this thing, and then I was done with it like that. That makes sense. You might be sitting in this room, by the way, as I was 24 years ago at my high school youth gathering when I was here. You might be sitting in here thinking the same thing, where you're like, I played football. I gave so much to playing football. I gave so much to swimming. And I'm ending at the end of my high school career, and it's kind of done. And that's not fun. That makes sense. Anybody, you don't have to raise your hands on that one, I guess, if you don't want to. But anybody feel that way? I got a few hands raised. Yeah. Thank you for that vulnerability and honesty. It's hard. And so a few years later, and by a few years, I mean a lot of years later, I found running. Running became a thing in my life. I had never run a mile in my life. I mean that, like, when we had to run the mile in gym class, anybody ever have to run the mile in gym class? Your favorite activity? No. This guy like laughed at me when I said that. I would just like walk it, and my teacher would always be like, you got to do it again. I said, you're going to get the same result. Man, I'm not running. I don't run. If I'm running, you better be running too, because something's chasing us. And we went and watched a friend run a marathon, and I was completely out of shape. Again, I hadn't done anything athletic in years. And I thought to myself, man, I would love to do this. This would be amazing. And then she said, okay, next year. And I said, I can't do next year. But the year after that, I was joking. She thought I was serious. She said, you're going to run the Chicago Marathon with me. And 2 years later, that's exactly actually what happened. I started running. I got in shape, and I ran a marathon. And I learned so much, guys, from that experience. I learned so much from that training. I learned about discipline. I learned about balance and rhythm. I learned about priorities. I learned about taking care of my body. So many lessons I just didn't really know before this came along. So that's 2015 over there, right after I ran the first marathon. That's me with my wife, Jess. And I'll come back to this story of running in a little bit. But what I want to start with is this notion of what sport teaches. And I want to include in this section sport's greatest lie, because it really shapes us. We have to start with this because it's foundational to your understanding of who you are as an athlete, who you are if you're not an athlete, who you are if you're just a fan of sports. What does sport teach us? Sport is held up culturally. We celebrate sport for the valuable lessons it teaches. I just listed a few of them in my life, but we hold that up. People are like, sports are so great. Kids learn so many things. They get disciplined. They get whatever. I'm going to stop talking here for a second, and I'm going to hold up this next slide. I want you to turn to a few people next to you. Instead of me just giving all the examples, turn to a couple people next to you. I'm going to put 3 minutes on the screen. What are some positive lessons sports have taught you about faith and life? You all jumped in. That's awesome. 3 minutes. Let's hear like 5 of these things. Somebody like, raise your hand if you want to shout out one. All right, I got the guy, and I think it's a pink shirt over there. Stand up. Shout out. Discipline. Okay.
Patience with your teammates.
Oh, patience. Your teammates aren't like sitting around you anywhere, right?
No.
All right. That could have been really awkward the next time you played a game with them. If you're like, patience with us, really? Okay. I'm going to go to this side of the room. One and then two in the maroon shirt. Leadership. Okay. So like you learn your lessons and you move on to the next thing and you kind of like, even when it doesn't go well, there's more you can learn from it, take from it, et cetera. I'm going to go in the black shirt here. You don't get better if you don't put in effort and practice. I didn't get to everybody. So take like 3 seconds. If I didn't come to you and you had your hand in the air, shout it out now. What's your lesson? Yeah, those all make sense. That's great. All right. So you get this point. Yeah. You get this idea that sport teaches us valuable lessons. And so that's part of why people love sports so much. People put their kids in sports. They hold sports up as this amazing thing in our society. But I want to tell you this. And I don't know that this always gets held up, that sometimes, in many cases, for every positive lesson that sport teaches, there can be a negative lesson. For every positive, there can also be a negative. So, for example, we heard about teamwork, patience with my teammates. But what's a negative that goes along with that? Well, maybe I'm less patient because I get super competitive. I'm less patient with other people on other teams, not you. You seem kind. You're not that person. That was me. Maybe I was more patient with my teammates, but I developed this like cutthroat attitude about sports with other people that I was competing against. And that's not really good when you look at the fruits of the spirit being like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Yeah. So there can be all of these positive lessons, but there are also things that we don't always talk about that are negative lessons that come through sport. Now, this is a little bit trickier question, but I'm going to do the same thing we just did. Head back into that group that you were just in and talk about this for a couple minutes. Have you learned any negative lessons about life from sports? And if so, what were they? We're good. I hear we're good. All right. So I got number one, as I was eavesdropping on groups, I heard a couple things I wanted to hold up. So I got number one over here. Negative lessons learned from sport. One right here. Stand up nice and loud. You're in the front. So turn around so they can hear you.
Nothing is guaranteed.
I think, which can be a good lesson, but it's also a hard lesson to learn, right? It's also a hard lesson. Yeah. Two, same deal. Stand up, turn around nice and loud.
In baseball, I was told by a coach to slide in if I had to and hurt someone to score a point, and I wasn't all right with that.
I appreciate that you weren't all right with that. And not only is that a thing where it's like, ooh, that can be like a really tough deal because you don't want to do it, but like also the respect, also maybe the respect for coaches or the people that you look up to who you're like, I don't want to do that. Why are you telling me to do that? That's hard. Damages relationships. All right, my number three was over here. Not thinking about others, right? Sport, especially in American culture, is so glamorized that often what do? We put athletes up on a pedestal. We look at it as this thing, fame, fortune, all the stuff that goes along with sport, and it replaces maybe the love of the game that you had originally. All right, four, I had somebody in this row. I said, y'all deal with that and volunteer as tribute over here. Being stuck in your injury and feeling like there's nothing you can do, like a feeling of helplessness sometimes, that's a real thing. All right, I'm going to go green, then blue, then burgundy. So I know that that doesn't mean anything to most of you. Doubting yourself and losing confidence. When things don't go right, it's really easy in sport, and we'll come back to that. It's a really great point. We'll come back to that. When things don't go well in sport, it's really easy to doubt yourself, lose your confidence. Blue. Gets treated as a good thing to be against other people. Excellent. And burgundy. Oh, yeah, your value is based on your achievement. We'll come back to that for sure. All right, if I didn't get to you, shout it out. 3, 2, 1. Yeah, I think those are all right. And those were all great. So here's the deal. Y'all understand this. This is baseline stuff to say, like, do you understand the idea that sport does teach us things, but it also affects us. And to the point that my friend in the burgundy shirt over here just made, the biggest lie that sports tells, and by the way, sports tells a lot of lies. It tells you that everybody can be big, famous, this sort of thing, all this, like whatever it is, sport tells a lot of lies. The biggest lie sport tells is exactly what you just said. You are what you accomplish. You are what you accomplish. If you don't know, this is a snippet here from our friends, the Mighty Ducks. I said it earlier, man, we put so much of our identity in our athletic accomplishments and what we do, and we start to see ourselves that way. And when that goes away, oh, we get resentful, we feel hurt, we feel stuck, and it's no fun. It's really hard. That your worth is now based on what you can achieve, what you can accomplish. I mean, think about that. Like in sport, if you're on a team sport, especially, like your place on the team is based on what? What you can contribute. It's not about whether you're a nice guy or a nice gal. It's, do you score enough runs? Do you hit the ball well? Do you score enough goals? Can you stop enough shots? And friends, like, we'll get to this in a second. That runs completely contrary to the Christian gospel. And so now we feel this tug and pull, even if we don't realize that that's what's happening in our identities. Who I'm meant to be, who I'm made to be in Christ versus what I need to do to keep playing this game that I love. Does that make sense? Y'all feel that? That happened to me. The running thing. I'd never run a mile in my life. Started running, ran for about 5 years. Loved it. And in part, what I loved was this quote on the right. This race, the marathon, is literally 26 miles of people lining the roads thinking you're the greatest person on earth. I loved the way that people would cheer for me. I loved the way that people would support me, care for me, etc. People I'd never met. It's one of the things that made me fall in love with marathoning was the idea that, like, I can cheer for you without cheering against you because none of us are going to win. We all just want everybody to make it to the finish line. Does that make sense? And so this was taken after my last marathon in 2019. And I didn't know when I ran that race that it was going to be my last marathon. I had trained really hard. And in 5 years, I had knocked over an hour off of my marathon time, which is pretty incredible for a guy who'd never run before. And then 2020 came, and we all know what happened there with our friend COVID-19. And so the marathon doesn't happen that I'm registered for. And I train and I train and I train. And running actually became, rather than a competitive thing for me, it became an outlet. It's where I spent the most time talking to God. It became me and God out on the trail. And I'd ask questions and I would pray and I would rant and I would vent and I'd be angry sometimes about what was happening in the world. And meanwhile, I'm getting in the best shape of my life, to be really honest. And I'm ready for the 2021 marathon. And so one day I go out for a training run and I get about a block from my house and I can't breathe. Keep in mind what I just said. I'm in the best shape of my life. And now I'm a block into a run and I can't breathe. And I stumble home and I go to bed and I don't get out of bed for 3 weeks trying to figure out why I have no energy and what is wrong with me. And all I know in that moment is that if this doesn't get fixed, my running days are over. This thing that I've loved so much, the thing that I actually felt brought me closer because it gave me time with God, is gone for me. I didn't know on that day when I was so happy and smiley that that was going to be the end of it for me. Now, there's a happy ending to that story. I'm here. I'm standing here. I still don't do much running or exercising. I'm trying to figure it out. We can talk more about that later if you want. But it's not life-threatening and everything's okay now. The doctors have helped work through all that. But the thing that maybe gutted me as much as anything was the fact that I was looking at it going, I'm going to lose that feeling. I'm going to lose that identity. Here's the thing I want you to hear in this section as we wrap up this section on the idea of what sport teaches us. Sport teaches us that your identity is based on what you accomplish, that you are what you achieve. We think our lives are rooted in moments like this, where you come in, your arms are in the air, you're celebrating a win, you're victorious, you're doing this thing, you've trained, you've worked, you've done it. And man, like, let me tell you something. I wish I had learned this when I was your age. That's why I'm telling you this now. Your life is not based in that. Your identity is not based on it. It is based in somebody putting their arms in the air, holding their arms out in what looks like a moment of defeat, but really for you, it is a moment of victory when Christ endured the cross, scorning its shame for you and for me. Yeah? Compare those two pictures, man. Somebody with their arms outstretched, celebrating a win. Jesus looking very defeated. But in that seeming defeat, you get a victory you could never earn yourself. I get a victory I could never earn myself. That is your identity. Yes? I appreciate how you were like locked in on that. You were like very quiet. You were ready for that. That's your identity. And we know that it's not based on your worth because God has told us. God has said where there is this lie that you are what you accomplish. God says, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God didn't wait for you to score the big goal, pass the winning touchdown, make the big stop, whatever it was. God, in the midst of our sin, in the midst of our self-destruction, in the midst of our chaos, sent Jesus for us. Your identity is not that of an athlete. Your identity, it's part of it. It's not the totality of it. Your identity as an athlete is only for a season. Now, I'm not talking like one soccer season or one basketball season. It's for a part of your life. It's not meant to be forever. Ask your adult leaders someday, maybe not right in this moment, ask them how they feel walking around the heat and humidity of New Orleans. Y'all have so much energy some days. I walk around these hallways and I'm encouraged by your energy. But adult leaders, man, we feel that some days, don't we? Maybe the adult leaders are looking at me going like, I have all that energy. What are you talking about? Your body breaks down over time. You're not meant to be an athlete forever. It's only for a season of your life. And that's okay. That's actually normal. The Bible tells us this. For everything, there's a season. And a time for every matter under heaven, Ecclesiastes 3:1. Sport, in some ways, for you as an athlete, is a fleeting commodity. It's a thing that won't last forever, and that's okay. So again, whether you're sitting here today and you're the star athlete and you got the college scholarship next year to play somewhere, if you're lamenting the fact that nobody recruited you out of high school, if you're like me and you're like, injuries have taken me out of the sport that you love, know that it's actually okay, because the part of your identity that doesn't change, the foundation of your identity, is this. You are a baptized, beloved child of God. Nothing you do changes that. Nothing you do changes that. God loves you with an everlasting love. Not because you're an athlete, not because you're amazing at every sport, whatever it is. That's not why God loves you. God loves you because he's made a choice about you and he loves you regardless of your athletic prowess. That makes sense? For all the good that sport teaches us, it teaches us that lie that we are what we accomplish. But I want you to remember this. If you take one thing from this session, this is your identity. That's the thing. Yeah? Now stick with me for the last 20 minutes, okay? There's still more to come. These will be much quicker, but that's the driving force behind all this. If you want to understand how sports are beautiful and sports are beneficial and sports are good for you, you have to first understand that. And when you understand that, when you understand that sports are not your primary identity, you find freedom. You can find freedom in that piece. I want you to think about this really fast. We're going to talk about this. You can take a picture of this slide. You can write this one down. There we go. If it'll click through there. When have you tried to earn your worth in sports or life? And how did it feel? Did it feel good when you had to try and earn your spot, when you had to try and earn your place? How does grace change your perspective? The idea that God doesn't have to do any of this, but by his love for you, he gave Jesus. It's not because of what you've done. It's because of his grace. How does that feel? How does it change your perspective on sports and life? I'm going to move us on because we need to keep rolling for time's sake here. Like I said, I could go a long way here. Who you were made to be. When we understand that, we can move forward in freedom, in sport. I wish I understood this stuff when I was your age. I wish I had learned these lessons earlier. What I've realized this week as I was trying to finish this up and finish up slides, pull things for this session is that these aren't just theological premises. This is, again, what I'm living. This is why I keep interjecting with my own story. But God has God is at work in all things, through all things, and that includes sport. Let's begin with this section here from Luther's explanation of the first article of the Creed. God made you and all creatures. He made me and all creatures, that he has given me my body and soul, eyes, ears, and all my members, my reason and all my senses. He still preserves them. He richly and daily provides me with all that I need to support this body and life, so on and so forth. No merit or worthiness in me. God is caring for you now. I got a friend up here who's got his knee braced and he's got crutches, and God is caring for you physically even now. He's like laughing at me. Does it always feel like it as you're crutching around the convention center? I'm not teasing, I promise. Right? Doesn't always feel like that. Yeah. It's hard. But God is caring for you now, and he's given you these things as a gift. He's given you your body, your soul, your eyes, ears, all of this stuff. He preserves it. Part of the way he's preserving it is through the doctors and through the medical care you're getting. Yeah. All right. So we see this, and I think you're familiar with this idea. At the end there, it says, for all this is my duty to thank, praise, serve, and obey him. Well, what does it look like to serve and obey God through sport? There's this story in the Bible that you are probably familiar with, that you probably know. It's one of the best known parables out there. It's the parable of the Good Samaritan. We won't read the whole parable, but it starts with this piece where a teacher of the law, an expert in the law, comes up to Jesus and says, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus replies, what is written in the law? How do you keep it? Or excuse me, how do you read it? And the guy says this: you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. This, for me, when I look at this, this is a blueprint, not only for quote unquote acquiring eternal life, but it's the blueprint for how we love God in sport. Look at the things that are said here. Heart, soul, strength, mind. We use all of those in athletics, don't we? Some of you are looking at me quizzically. We use all those things in sports, yes? Heart, soul, strength, mind. Thank you. Like one guy up here is like, yeah. It's not, this passage is not offered in the context of athletic competition, but we can still utilize it as a framework to better understand the Christian's role in sport and how God is at work in your athletic work. So I want to hold up each one of these and just kind of walk through what it looks like maybe to serve God, to love God with your heart, with your soul, with your mind, with your strength in sport. And so we start with this idea of the heart, the center for our affections, our loves, our desires, our interests. And so God says, love me with your heart. So we compete with right desires. We had a story about that just a minute ago. That I'm not going to hurt somebody just to get the win. I'm going to compete in a way that makes sense, that's helpful, that loves others, that's good for people. We guard against athletic idolatry. We heard over here the idea that we sometimes elevate sport so much with fame, fortune, all that kind of stuff that goes along with it. We get distracted by it for the wrong reasons. And so we keep our heart guarded against those pieces. We play with humility, with perseverance, with endurance, with gratitude, even in failure. Even in failure, we look at all of that through the lens of Christ, who has given us this love for sport. We maintain this love for sport, recognizing that it's because of God's gift of the body. It's because of God's gift continuing to maintain and support my life that I can do anything athletic. We compete with the soul. But for us, the soul is really more than just this ambiguous thing. It's the totality of a person in their relationship with God. It encompasses all of that. It encompasses your baptismal identity, your spiritual disciplines. And so we remember that we are not just athletes. We are first and foremost what? We are first and foremost baptized children of God. Our anchor is in Christ, not our identity as athletes, not in our achievements. We prioritize prayer, praise, worship, the sacraments. We bring those into the sporting world when we can. We can pray with others. We can live that out as a part of our athletic vocation. It's an easy thing for you to do, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. Strength. We care for the body. We restrain from misuse. You don't just go gung-ho, all out, training, weightlifting, et cetera, and abuse your body so that you can get further. We rest, we recover, we care for the thing that God has entrusted us with which is this body. We don't use drugs. We don't use performance-enhancing drugs. We don't take steroids. We don't do any of that kind of stuff in an effort to just get ahead. We care for what God has entrusted with us in the body. And then lastly, the mind, and this one often gets overlooked, reason and senses. God has given us our reason and senses, we said in Luther's explanation of the first article. And so we use those wisely, our intellect, our reason, our understanding. We discern and conform to the body, to the model Christ has given us. We engage others in sport. We question competitiveness, overt competitiveness. We question all these things that are the negative things. We don't just accept them, but we say, how is this affecting my faith? How is this affecting my life as we engage with others? So as we wind down, like we're moving close to the end here. So I want to just quickly say this, like take a picture of that, write that down, whatever you want to do. But I want you to think through this. Which of those do you do really well in your life? Which of those do you really do really well? Are you really engaging with the heart and you're saying like, I do that, but the strength thing, man, I'm not so good at that. Which of those can you improve on? Which of those can you kind of come around and say like, let's really work on how I'm using the mind as a part of my following Jesus in sport? Everybody got that? Who wants it? Yep. Part three, love your teammate as yourself. This one is an interesting one because we've heard it a couple times that like we get so focused on ourselves. Our guy over here pointed us to that with the pink bandana, right? He said, I focus on myself and not on others. Sometimes we think sport is about us and it's not. Sport's not just about you. I don't know if you knew that. Everybody know that? Sport's not just about you. It's not just about me. Without your competitors, sport doesn't happen. Which is an interesting thing to think about, right? Like sometimes we're like, oh, we don't like them. But then at the end of the day, it's like sport doesn't happen if it's not for the competition. Yeah? Got to have an opponent. Even if the opponent is like the clock. So sport's not just about you. And frankly, neither is your life in Christ. Go back to that Luke text really quickly. In Luke 10, we're not just told to love God. We're reminded to love our what? It's up there in blue. You can read it. Love our. That's hard to do in sports sometimes. Yeah? I'm still learning this one. I'm going to be learning this one forever because I'm pretty competitive. Anybody out there really competitive too? So you might be learning this one for a while as well. I'm still learning this one. So without being able to compete, I've really had to figure that out. And how do I direct that? How do I love my neighbor? Because I'm not competing, so I'm not shaking hands with my opponent at the end of the game. I'm not congratulating another coach and this kind of stuff. So for me, what loving my neighbor through sport looks like is this. It's a little bit threefold. I get to help my three-year-old daughter in her athletic pursuits. She loves soccer. I think she wants to be a soccer player and a doctor. I don't know how she's going to do both of those things. Be very impressive, right? I get to support my teams, my clubs, Minnesota United and Tottenham Hotspur show up there. Anybody, bonus points in the middle? Can anybody tell me who that soccer player in the middle is? Not a soccer crowd. Okay. If you figure it out later, come tell me. Find me. You get a bonus prize. It's definitely not Messi. But one of the other things I get to do, and this was a very unexpected thing in my life. No longer being an athlete, but a fan has opened doors to sharing the gospel in ways that I never would have dreamed possible. I just wanted to find a place to watch my favorite soccer team, Tottenham Hotspur, without annoying my wife. Like two of the married people in the room laughed at that. I'd be watching a game. She's like, you got to go. You're disturbing the baby. You're annoying me. And I found a group of in Minneapolis called Minneapolis Spurs. It's the Tottenham Hotspur supporters group. And I started to go just to watch games with people who loved the team as much as I did. This is easy because they're on my team, right? They're my teammates in some ways. We're cheering for the same club. We're doing it together. Hundreds of us gather every game, every match day, to watch our favorite team compete. And after a while, I started to build relationships and get to know people. And I had people start to ask, so what do you do? Which is always kind of a weird question in a very diverse group like this. And I would say, well, I teach a little bit of a lot of stuff at Concordia University, St. Paul. And they said, well, so what does that mean? A little bit of a lot of stuff. I said, well, I teach Christian ministry, theology, leadership studies, and quantitative research methods. And I kid you not, the first day I said that, I had a guy pull a chair closer to me and he said, you teach theology. I think he's saddling up for a debate. He says, can I ask you a question about God? Okay. And for over 2 hours, he asked me, I'm pretty sure, every question he had about God. Not because we ran into each other on the street, not because he was in my class, not because we met at a youth gathering, because we love the same sports team. The next week I went to watch a game, and before the game even kicked off, I had a different guy pull up a stool and said, you're the guy who teaches theology, right? And this guy said, no. It's a 6:30 a.m. kickoff, and I'm going, can I just take a drink of my coffee before we get here? I said, yeah, that's me. Can I ask you some questions about God? And for many weeks, for the last 3 years, with this group of people, I've got folks coming up saying, some who I know saying, can I ask you another question? And some that I've never met saying, you guy who teaches theology, right? Not because of anything other than we loved the same team. Sports afforded this opportunity to share the gospel. Sport in a group filled with people who don't know Jesus. There are Muslims. There are Buddhists. I got one guy who refers to himself as a Buddhist Christian. I tell him that's not a thing. And he like slaps me on the shoulder and laughs and walks away. Yeah, it's weird. There are members of the LGBTQ community in there. There are atheists, agnostics, folks that I'm encountering and am able to share the gospel with because of our love of sport. That's easy though, right? This one's easy because I teach theology and we support the same team. That text though, we're going to skip the discussion question for now in the name of time. The Luke 10 text where it's the neighbor thing. Who's the neighbor? Parable of the Good Samaritan, who's the neighbor? Who's the most neighborly in the text? This is not a trick question. The Samaritan, right? It's literally in the title. If you read the title of the story, you know that it's the Samaritan, yeah? Was that you in the green shirt who said that? No? That was this guy. All right, there it is. The guy who was the cultural enemy is the one who shows the most love, yeah? So when you look at sport, it's easy to love. Well, maybe it's not easy. Girl in the blue shirt up here gave me that earlier, that like she's learned patience with her teammates. So maybe it's not always easy to love your teammates, but it's easier to love your teammates maybe than it is to love the official that you think cost you the game. Somebody laughed at that. The coach who doesn't give you enough playing time. Somebody clapped at that. Holy cow. I hope you're not sitting right next to your coach. Again, it's going to make things even more awkward. The parent who rails against everything because their kid doesn't get enough playing time. The, dare I say, other team. It's harder to love them. Yeah? But sport gives you just such an opportunity to do that. To love the people who are with you and are on your team is easy. Easier, right? Yeah, she gave me a thumbs up. Easier to love the people who don't share your affiliation is harder. So let me offer 4 points on this, and then we'll move really quickly to the end because we're about out of time. Again, I got 16 weeks on this, so condensing it to 50 minutes was tough. Love in sport is not soft. Let's just say that right off the hop. Yeah. When we use the word love, sometimes it can be seen as a soft thing, especially in sports, that we don't talk about love in sports. I think if people talked about loving one another, caring for one another, being there for one another in sports, it'd be a better place, be a lot less toxic. Yes? Yeah. We show care for one another, compassion for one another, support for one another, even if they're not on our team. So that's not soft. So we can talk about love in sport and have it be okay. Yes? Yo, you're drifting on me. Yes? I put up here the Imago Dei in every role. Anybody know that term, Imago Dei? Image of God. That every person you encounter, not just the people on your team, not just the people who support the same team as you, they all bear the image of God. In part broken because of sin, but they bear it. You bear it. I bear it. The person sitting next to you, whether you think they do or not, they bear it too. Don't look at your neighbor. These guys are like looking at each other like, really? He bears the image of God. Yeah. So we love one another. Everybody is worthy of respect, dignity, care, compassion, etc. That makes even your rivals your neighbor. Even your rivals become your neighbor. And so sport can be missional when we live and play for others. It's not just about you and it's not just about what you bring, but it's how can you love others? What does your teammate need in the locker room today? What does your teammate need in the locker room today? Are they hurting? Are they down? Can you ask them about that? Can you walk with them in that? What is the rival? You play enough against other people. You know when something's not right with a person. What do they need? How can you support and care for them? How can you show love to people that you compete against? I am still learning this. I don't have great answers on this. I'm going to be learning this probably for the rest of my life. Because sport taught me to be cutthroat. Sport taught me to be hyper-competitive. And I'm trying to learn how to break myself of that. I'm trying to learn to live in sport with those fruits of the spirit that we talked about earlier, even when it's hard. So this is a question for you. Maybe it looks like you've seen videos like this. You've seen pictures like this where somebody like a runner falls and somebody else helps them up and gets them to the finish line. How well do you love your neighbor? I've confessed to you today, right? This is a confession for me to you that I'm not good at that. How well do you love your neighbor through sport, including those who are not on your team? Is sports really just about you, something you do, something you love, or is it about us? How well do you love your neighbor through sport, including those who are not on your team? And what's one thing you can do to improve? In the name of time, I won't tell you my one thing right now, but you can come up and ask me for it later if you want. More than a game. Last thing, and then I'll take some questions and then we'll move on. More than a game. Rethinking the church's relationship with modern sport. When we understand that sport is so much more than just a thing we do, a game we play, that it can actually be, there's freedom in it. It's an affirmation of the goodness of creation, a celebration of life in God's world. When we see it as a form of how we honor God and worship God, that we're freed from the burden of having to prove ourselves, that we're invited into the joy of receiving sport as a gift. When we see it as our calling, as a part of our calling, our vocation, it becomes a training ground for virtue when it's detached from ego and reattached to love of others. And then when we see it as missional, we bear witness, not just by praying before games or praying after a touchdown. When good things happen, we see it through all of these things, in the mundane, contested, beautiful space of sport. What if as a church, what if as athletes, what if as parents, what if as pastors and youth leaders, we stopped viewing sport just as the thing we do throughout the week, the thing we watch throughout the week, the thing we love throughout the week, and we start to view it as a critical arena for teaching and living the Christian faith? I outlined four pieces up here about how you can live out your calling as a Christian young man or a Christian young woman through sport, about how you can love your neighbor as yourself in sport. My challenge to you as you go from here is, can you rethink and reframe the way you view sport in your life around the Word of God?